We're now going to deal with traditional colleges, universities. We've got King's University College. Glenn Keeler is here to speak to us. Glenn. And from Concordia, we have LeVon Holland. And to intro into this section, we're going to have Joe Pollack talk about preparing for and getting the most out of a university education.
So good afternoon. Hopefully you have a little bit of staying power still after this long day. So I have the pleasure of introducing this final section of presenters. Traditional colleges and universities. Unfortunately, we have these two King's and Concordia represented, but we don't have any of the big U of A, U of C, you know, the bigger institutions here as well, which is unfortunate. However, so how do we prepare for and get the most out of a traditional college or university? And why would you choose one of these institutions over all the other options that are out there? I think in general, most people recognize that it's students who want to pursue a professional career, you know, perhaps like medicine, law, engineering, science, business, politics, education, would require a degree or often multiple degrees from a traditional university to be able to move forward in that particular career. I think we've heard all through the day that, you know, a lot of what we need to do in choosing is really to know yourself. So before anybody chooses a path of further education, you need to know and take some time to soul search. You know, what are your interests and gifts? What are you really good at? What are you passionate about? Important one is, what do others see in you and think that you would be good at? If you come from a faith background, what is your prayer life leading you towards, and what does God really want you to do with your gifts and talents? So hopefully, you know, many of you who are about to graduate have kind of identified a path, and whatever that path is, if it is involving a traditional university, there's a number of things that need to be done between now and the time you start there. And the first thing is a lot of research. Not all institutions are going to provide the program that you may or may be interested in. So you need to find out who offers the programs, what are their entrance requirements, and then between now, however many years you have between now and when you want to start the program, you need to make sure that your high school plan covers all the prerequisite material you need to cover, and you leave yourself enough time so that you can actually master that before you embark on your post-secondary career. Another good idea is to, if you have a particular profession in mind, is to job shadow. If you know someone who does that particular line of work, a lot of people end up thinking that they might like a certain profession, but then once they get into it, realize that, oh, maybe not. And so it's a good idea to rule things out before you start into it and not get 2 or 3 or 4 years into or graduate from a program and then get to work in that field and find out that it's not for you. So spend time with people who are already in that profession. The latest Wisdom magazine had a great article. It was a really short one. I don't know if anybody had the chance to read it. It was a one-pager by Greg Landry. One person at least has read the magazine. Greg Landry is a homeschooling dad who is also a college professor, and he wrote this little article talking about what it is that homeschoolers come to college and university well prepared with and what some of their challenges are. So I'm just going to kind of summarize that article just very briefly. On the positive side, he says that homeschoolers are independent learners, they take initiative. They handle classroom social situations very well, whether it be with peers or with professors. They're comfortable in asking questions, and they ask good questions. And finally, they take their education seriously. They all generally have good attitudes, and they work hard to do the best they can. Now, where he identified three areas that high school homeschoolers are generally, he finds, kind of deficient in. And anybody who knows me and has heard me speak before will know this is music to my ears, because I've been for years advocating for people to just take the challenge and do more in the area of math and science. And so number one is what Greg says, is that kids, homeschooled high schoolers, tend to be a little bit less prepared for the sciences. And there's a steep learning curve. And especially if you're in some of the pre-professional programs at a university, where your first year is critical to you going on. If you're at the low end of the learning curve and everybody else is kind of halfway up it already, you're at a disadvantage. And if you don't do well in that first year, sometimes it's hard to go on. So he's saying we need to be challenging our students, and for the students, challenging yourselves more during your high school years to really do the tough math and science. The second thing he identifies is insufficient test-taking experience, especially timed tests. I have a son who's just in the first year of a program at U of A here this year, and really finding that to be true. As homeschoolers, we can be a lot more relaxed in going through through school. And even though you might take tests, you don't necessarily get used to doing a lot of them from an early age. And so that's one area that you could do more of between now and the time you start a university program. And the last thing he identifies is just difficulty sometimes meeting deadlines and juggling a heavy workload. And that's, again, something my son is finding. Ever since he was a little boy, we always called him our coffee shop man, because he would like to sort of take his time just to... And he was definitely capable of learning advanced stuff, but he'd be the kind of student that would really need time to take to chew on things and think about it and discuss it with other people, and then he'd come up with a really good understanding. But then you get thrown into the first year of a university engineering program where you're taking six courses at a time. Four of them are absolutely brutal with the expectations. And it's just a huge workload that, just a lot. Even kids in school aren't used to that kind of workload. And as homeschoolers, I think even more so. We can take one or two courses at a time, kind of, and have that time to chew on things and really, really know them, which is good in one side. But on the other hand, we need to get used to doing things a little bit more efficiently with our use of time. So his advice is develop a solid foundation of science and math through the high school years, again, probably starting in junior high. Parents, start. If you have kids that are leaning towards more the technical end of things, that anything that's especially going to have a math or science component, but even if they're more into humanities, university tests are timed tests. So there's no harm in getting your kids used to that, even as early as junior high, grade 7 or 8, get them used to taking time tests so that they can learn to focus and really do well on tests. And again, for parents, have hard deadlines when assignments are given. Some other advice that I just asked my own kids who are in post-secondary about, just some advice to pass on for preparing. And there's probably a few younger kids in here as well, but even from the earliest age you can, learn with the intention of really knowing, and not just to get through the book. Learn to really understand the logic behind everything that you are learning. Get used to working in groups. That's one other thing that, for success at university, if you try to do it on your own, it's tough. So you'll see that around campus there's going to be little groups of students getting together to study together, to work on assignments, do their lab work, write-ups and things like that together. You can learn a lot from others, and there's going to be strength in numbers there. My son took time off before he went back to university after high school, and he said definitely if you take some time off before starting post-secondary, take a significant amount of time to review everything. Again, they want you to be running full speed by the time you start. And he felt like he was still kind of relearning some of the high school stuff for the first while, and it took him a little while to get kind of caught up to speed. With math and science, that's something you can't really casually learn. You've really got to dedicate yourself to it and really kind of challenge yourself through the high school years. And finally, really enjoy the wonder of what you're learning and learn to appreciate some of the really awesome stuff that you can learn, whether it's high school or beyond that. Just to finish off before I hand it over to the presenters, it seems like more and more people are looking to have credentials for their kids to be able to take to a university. And we'll hear what these gentlemen have to say in a moment, but I know the big universities really don't want to look at a portfolio or some alternative. They want to see your official marks on a transcript. And so more parents and high school students are coming to us facilitators saying, well, how do we do this? And my own children have chosen to not do an Alberta diploma, but to do the senior level university entrance requirement courses at home to complete the material to write the diploma exam. So they actually have a transcript that has just their entrance requirements on it. None of my kids have a diploma, but they all have their university entrance senior level courses. And more people are kind of asking about that option. And of course, there are all kinds of materials we can still use. And a lot of people with science, I know people always ask me about, well, the Jay Weil course, science courses, are they good? Do they prepare kids for post-secondary? And my answer is always, they're good materials. It prepares them with a good foundation. But the level of ability that you'd need to pursue science and math at post-secondary level is not fostered enough with that program alone. The kind of the level of questions that they ask in that program needs to be supplemented. So I often just recommend the two real easy things to do for any math or science course at the high school level is the SNAP workbooks, which are the student notes and problems, which are workbooks that kind of go along with the Alberta curriculum. And the nice thing is you can still use an alternative textbook source and then do these workbooks as a supplement if you wanted to eventually get credit for an Alberta high school level course. And then the second thing, which was referred to earlier by some of the graduates, was the key. There's a booklet called The Key that you can get for every course, and it's designed as an exam preparation course that students can work through to get used to the kinds of questions that are asked on previous exams. And there are actual unit tests and final exams in there that your kids can do to prepare. I'll be around, so you can talk to me more about that after. But again, just because more and more people are asking about how do we get those credentials, it's something you don't need to shy away from. It's very doable at home as long as the dedication is there. All right, so with all that said, now I'll just pass it over to our two presenters. Firstly, our presenter from King's College.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Glenn Keeler. I am the registrar of the King's University College, and I'm here to talk to you a bit about our institution. I feel like I have an unfair advantage over other institutions, though, because I have the best visual aid. But you are most welcome to walk around and see our campus. Most of the art that is on the walls either comes from students or faculty members. The series of panels across the back here are scenes from the life of David, done by one of our studio art courses. So you are most welcome to tour around. The mission statement for the King's University College is that we exist to provide university education that inspires and equips learners to bring renewal and reconciliation to every walk of life as followers of Jesus Christ, the servant king. There's a number of components to that mission statement. And I'll pull out a few pieces and talk about those. The first is that we provide university education. All of our programs are accredited by the Campus Alberta Quality Council, and that means that they have the same status as degrees at any other university in the province. We are members of the Association of Universities and Colleges in Canada. That means graduates from our programs are treated as graduates from any other university in Canada when they go on to further study. We offer Bachelor of Arts, Bachelor of Science, Bachelor of Music, Bachelor of Commerce, and Bachelor of Education programs that we have for the BA and BSc programs, both 3- and 4-year versions of those programs. For the B.Ed. programs, they are after-degree programs. We're committed to the model that you need a solid foundation, at least a 3-year degree in your discipline before you move on to studying how to be an effective educator. Generally, our programs are structured around a liberal arts model. So every student who comes to King's, regardless of major, will take courses in English, history, philosophy, and theology, even if they don't want to. They will also be pushed beyond their disciplinary boundaries by being required to take fine arts or language courses, courses in social science, and courses in natural science. We have 19 different major and minor areas, a total of 31 different disciplinary areas in which we teach. And we are growing relatively rapidly. We're up to about 670 students at this point. Another element of our mission statement talks about having our students act as followers of Jesus Christ, the servant king. One of the foundational statements for the way King's views the world comes from a long time ago, but the statement is that there is no square inch of creation that is not under the lordship of Jesus Christ. And we think those square inches also count academic areas. So there's no square inch of English that is not under the lordship of Jesus Christ. There's no square inch of philosophy that's not under the lordship of Jesus Christ. Gets harder from here on out. There's no square inch of mathematics that's not under the lordship of Jesus Christ. There's no square inch of my area, computing science, that is not under the lordship of Jesus Christ. So in every course, our faculty are expected to relate that course material to their personal faith as followers of Christ. We do have a requirement that all of our faculty members assent to our faith and mission statements, and so they are expected to bring that into the room when they're teaching, and it's a condition for continuous tenure that they have developed a well-thought-out statement of the interaction between Christian faith and their discipline at that point. But we also think that faith comes in the co-curricular, the stuff that happens outside the classroom. So our student life department leads this effort for us. We have weekly chapels. We have evening worship that's mostly focused on our resident students. We have discipleship groups, Bible study groups in the residence, a number of activities that bring faith into the co-curricular. However, we have open admissions. We do not require that you are a Christian to attend. And what we're doing is trying to be open. We're telling people up front what we're about as an institution, that it's university education, but from a Christian faith perspective. But if you are not a Christian and you are still willing to come, knowing that, we're happy to have you if you're qualified. So it's open admissions, and that leads to an interesting dynamic in the classrooms. You will have 26 different denominational groups represented in the student body. But you'll also have non-Christian groups. We have a number of Muslim students. We have students who are Sikh. We have students who tell us that they have no faith at all, which is a bit of a myth. You actually have a faith. You just aren't conscious of it. But at any rate, that leads to the dynamic in the classroom of having people who are bringing a different point of view into that discussion that otherwise could become sort of insular. The third element I'd like to highlight out of our mission statement is that we are hoping to inspire and equip our students to bring renewal and reconciliation in every walk of life. And we mean that as every walk of life. Some people approach university as a ticket to employment, and you just get that piece of paper and then you're employable, and it is true that the employment rate for university graduates is much better than for the general population. And we do hope to prepare you for vocational service. But we think it also goes beyond that. Many of our students go on to graduate school or professional programs, and that represents a new challenge in their lives, whether it's med school or law school or going into education. Any of those professional programs or graduate studies are going to bring new challenges, and we are aiming to have them bring their faith and life commitments through their first degree and on into their graduate degrees. And we've had the joy recently of having sort of a generational turnover in faculty and being able to hire some of our graduates who've gone on to PhD work back into our own faculty ranks. And we're also equipping them, we hope, for service in their more personal life, so that they will have taken the experiences of service that they've had here, whether that's serving with our King's Hands group down at the Mustard Seed, down at Hope Mission, whether that is going with our Honduras Water Project team to help do the fun work of building a water system in the Honduras. Whatever action that is here, that they will bring that orientation to pursue justice and to walk with God in the rest of their life. I'll tell you a few details here along the way. For admission, our homeschool admission policy, which was the first amongst degree-granting institutions in Alberta back in 1990, requires that you demonstrate English proficiency and that you have a letter from your program facilitator saying that you are prepared for university studies. Okay, that's it. It's pretty straightforward. There's a little wrinkle. If you're going into programs where there are prerequisites, high school prerequisites for the courses, and that's mostly in the sciences, then we have to do something to demonstrate that you are prepared for that. For math, we have our own math proficiency exam that we can administer that would work to facilitate that. For the other sciences, what we tend to do is admit you as an unclassified or undeclared student for the first term of work. You would then meet with the instructor in the particular courses for which you don't have on paper prerequisites and discuss a prerequisite waiver. If you get that, then you enter the course. You take the course. Once you've succeeded in that course, then we admit you to the program. So it's a reasonably pragmatic solution to not being able to have a piece of paper that says that you have those high school prerequisites. We also will take, if you write SATs or ACTs or other standardized exams in areas, we will look at those to try and establish those kinds of prerequisite elements. I've been asked, not surprisingly, several times today about costs. How much does it cost? And as an independent academic institution, we do receive an operating grant from the provincial government, but not nearly to the level of other institutions. The consequent effect is that our tuition is higher. So tuition and fees this year would be $9,228 for a full course load. And if you want to live on campus, assuming you're in our tower residence and you're eating in our cafeteria using a meal plan, that's another $5,390. My son just started his first year here this fall. My daughter's in her fourth year here. Didn't notice this so much with my daughter, but when my son started, I noticed that we weren't really spending more money to do that. We were just transferring costs from our former grocery bill now onto paying for occupancy here. We do support some of that cost. We give away over $500,000 in financial aid every year to our student body. And our students are also qualified for various provincial scholarship programs. The Jason Lang and Louise McKinney are the two richest that our students, we nominate them based on their academic performance once they're in our programs. Some of our students also receive financial support by playing for our sports teams. We have teams in basketball, volleyball, and soccer who compete at the provincial level in the ACAC athletics program. And they can also receive a scholarship, assuming they meet residency requirements for that participation. And of course, there's the ubiquitous student loans. But we do try and help students manage their student loans so that when they get to the end of the program, they have a manageable amount and they're aware of what their obligations will be from that point forward. So to summarize, King's is a place you can send your kids at that moment where they're making a transition. They're moving from being under your supervision to becoming their own self-standing learners. We want to make sure that they have the best chance of success at our institution as possible. And so when we look at all of those documents that you're sending in and the application form, the question we're asking ourselves is, does this student have the capacity to succeed? And since I review all of those applications, I can tell you that since I became registrar, we've had many homeschooled students show up at King's and succeed very well in our program. So I think they've been well prepared for that. So I should thank you for preparing your students well. Thanks.
Well, this is our first time at this particular conference, and we want to thank you for inviting us. My name is LaVon Holland, and I'm representing Concordia today. Concordia, how many of you have heard of Concordia University College of Alberta? Okay, so a couple of you. So that's great. What can I tell you about Concordia? Concordia is a university college here in the province of Alberta, and our motto for this year and our new marketing directive is that you can expect more from a Concordia education. Just stepping back a little bit, what is a university college? I know that some people, I've met with some students, and they say, well, are you a university? Are you a college? For all intents and purposes, we're a university. University college is the designation given to the independent academic institutions here in the province of Alberta. But in terms of our credentialing, we're recognized through our affiliation with the AUCC and certainly our accreditation through the government of Alberta. All of our degrees are recognized at other universities, both in Canada and the United States and internationally. Concordia offers many different degree programs, Bachelor of Arts degrees, both three-year and four-year. We offer Bachelor of Science degrees. We offer a degree in management. We offer a Bachelor of Education degree, a Bachelor of Environmental Health degree. And we also offer master's programs, and we're excited to be introducing a new master's coming up in the fall. So we've got a number of degrees that are available to our students. We are affiliated, based on a liberal arts education model, similar to King's. So our students are required to take, you know, philosophy, fine arts courses, social science courses, and science courses, whether they're in arts, whether they're in science or in management, and our environmental health and education degrees are after degree programs. What else can you expect from a university education at Concordia? We are affiliated with the Lutheran tradition, so there's a strong spiritual life on campus. We have daily chapels, we have a number of Bible studies, and we also offer church work certificates and programs if students are interested in pursuing some further studies in that area. We offer a number of clubs and activities on campus as well. In addition to, we have some sports teams that compete at the national level in soccer, badminton. We offer track and field, so we've got a number of different programs as well. In terms of our admission requirements, Concordia has a homeschool policy, so we've got some calendars at the back, and we'd love you to grab a copy of those if you're interested. There are several ways that you can be admitted to Concordia. One is certainly to fulfill the grade 12 requirements. So if you were to challenge those departmental exams and complete the 530 level courses from Alberta Education, certainly you'd be admissible that way. But we are also admitting students based on a portfolio. So if you submit a letter from your homeschool facilitator, and then the coursework that, or samples of the coursework that you're providing in each of the five different subject categories that you would need for whatever program that you're applying to, we will review that at our faculty level and then get back to you with an admission decision. And I can let you know that we certainly have had a number of students that have applied, that have been home educated, and that we've admitted and that have succeeded very well at Concordia. We have an entrance scholarship program that's fairly robust. Our program not only provides scholarships to students in their first year, but it's renewable in their second, third, and potentially fourth years of the program as well. We wanted to make sure that our home school students were also eligible for that. So For students that are providing SAT scores, then you will also be eligible for our scholarship program. There are a number of other ways of being admitted as well, and we can certainly talk about that individually if you wanted. I remember talking with someone a little bit earlier during one of the breaks, and they wanted to know, and I guess it was a question earlier as well about, you know, what age do you need to start, or what age do you need to be? Is there an age requirement? Really, you need to meet the minimum entrance requirements, and we don't necessarily care about your age, so you could be 10 and we could still potentially admit you if you've got the courses that you need. In our open studies program, we've had a number of students that are taking courses there that don't have the prerequisites, and they can use, that don't need prerequisites for those courses, sorry, and they can use those courses, you know, to complete a homeschool program or to supplement some of the coursework that you're doing. And also use that for admission to our school as well. So certainly welcome any questions that you have. And I think that's everything I had to say.
Thank you, LaVon and Glenn. Now, do you have any questions for these gentlemen? Yes.
One of the young ladies was saying that she wasn't eligible for the entrance scholarship because she took an Athabasca University course. Like, would that?
Okay. So the question is, one of the previous presenters was unable to receive an entrance scholarship because she had already taken some university courses through Athabasca. Would that be the same case here?
Students who complete less than 9 credits at another university, less than 9 transferable credits, are still eligible for our entrance scholarships. We also have an entrance scholarship for transfer students. So if you've completed 24 credits, you know, obviously it's based on a minimum GPA, but you would also be eligible for an entrance scholarship. Our transfer entrance scholarship is a one-time scholarship, unlike our high school awards. So. But yeah, if you complete less than 9 credits at Athabasca or another university, then you'd still be eligible.
And the answer for King's is going to be very similar. If you've completed less than 9 credits, then we're considering you on the basis of your high school work. And so then you would be eligible for those high school admission scholarships, with the footnote that we need some way of establishing a GPA of sorts to be able to award that. And then if you've completed more than 9 credits, then you're hopefully completing enough so that you have about 24 transferable credits, and then we can consider you for our transfer scholarship instead.
Thank you. So the question is regarding sports. Do you try out before you arrive at the college or once you're already on campus?
And we have identification camps that happen in the spring, usually before you are a student here, although if you didn't do sports in your first year here, that would be the point at which you'd also be being identified by the coaches as a prospective team member would be in the spring.
Yeah, for us it's similar, both in the spring and in the summer. It would depend on the sport, though.
Yes.
The entrance scholarships, Levon, you said that SAT scores would qualify. What about ACT?
Yes, we look at ACT as well.
So the question was SAT and ACT scores are acceptable. This is a very silly question, and I'll identify the speaker. No. What is SAT?
Scholastic Aptitude Test. Yeah. Standardized test out of the U.S., and it's the nice thing about SATs is they're normed against everybody who writes the test in the U.S., so you really have a sense of where you fall compared to a large group of people who also wrote the same test.
See, it wasn't such a silly question. How do you go about taking an SAT?
You have to register to write your SATs, and we're unfortunately not an SAT test-taking center, so you would have to get in contact with the College Board themselves. I believe you can do that online.
Yes.
I know that occasionally the writing for that happens at the U of A, and there are outside of Edmonton, there's other test-taking centers.
This is the father of the girl with the silly question. He wants to know. What does ACT stand for?
I don't know. College test, and I can't remember. I think it's a... I don't remember what the first...
You don't remember what the A is?
It's another American. College test.
It's another college test. It's American college test, so. We obviously don't get a lot of ACT test writers, so.
If these tests are American, why are we writing them in Canada? A?
For us, you know, and I guess I should just back up. It's not the only test that we'll look at to make you eligible for our entrance scholarship awards. So, you know, grab a copy of the calendar or come back and we can chat about that. But we wanted a standardized test that, you know, we could have a benchmark for to determine whether or not we could award the entrance scholarships. Not required for admission, but certainly if you wanted to be eligible for the entrance scholarships. And SATs and ACTs are very, very standardized tests that are written all throughout the state. So, and certainly a number of schools in Canada that are admitting U.S. students have looked at those tests as well. So we've just needed a standardized test. There aren't a lot in Canada that we could use, and we wanted to kind of have something that's available for a lot of people to write.
Yeah, there have been over the years some attempts to create a standardized Canadian test, the CAATs. We're one version of that just have not caught on. And the reality is that in the U.S., the high school program varies dramatically from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And so for the post-secondaries, it's almost impossible to stay on top of what the coursework means, so the standardized tests are very important. In Canada, we only have the provincial jurisdictions to worry about, and for most post-secondaries, you can stay on top of that, and so you don't need a standardized test. So the motivation to have a Canadian standardized test just isn't there, and so it really hasn't gotten off the ground.
It really comes down to economy. It wasn't economically feasible to maintain a Canadian standards test. Just by bulk of use, those two tests are with us. And frankly, I mean, why do we drive American-designed cars and things like that, too? I mean, that's where the market is, and that's where they've been developed. And in some cases, it's not necessary to rebuild the wheel or redesign the wheel. These are pretty well-designed tests.